Welcome to episode 14, part 3 of Your Hearth at Home. If you have yet to listen to the first two parts of this series, I encourage you to do so to provide context to where Ali picks up his story now. As a brief reminder, he has made it to the US on a work visa as a cook at a summer camp. On his first day, it was clear that he did not have the skills or training that he had indicated on his application, and so he was facing being sent back to Ukraine after all that he had done to make it to the States. Understanding logically that he couldn't run for it, he came up with an idea to be of service to the camp in a different way, by delivering food to tables so that parents and campers didn't have to walk for their food, an idea inspired by a drive-through, something that Ali hadn't experienced prior to arriving in the States. It was this innovation that saved him from being sent back to Ukraine and gave him the chance to pursue his application to claim refugee status in the US.
Scott comes over to me. He said, you know, our camp has been existing for 7 or 8 years and I never experienced anything like this. And the parents are happy that they don't have to stand in line. And I talked to Anita and I want you to be here. Just, we agreed that you're going to be doing the dirty work and you're going to be serving, but keep going what you're doing. Great job. I was just, wow. At that time, I was so fatigued. I didn't even have tears. I surrender and I'm gonna do it. So I continued working at the camp. I continued doing hard work. It was a hard work. On the weekends, we were one day of a week, half of the day of the week, we were taking to a swimming pool, to Ames, we were taking to Boone, all these different places. And I got to see Americans, not just boys. I got to see girls and everybody else, mall, and we took some photos. I still have those photos. And I saw, wow, I the first thing that came to my perceptions, like American guys, and they mature so quick, like maybe something to do with food, but they're so much more like 16-year-old girl already looks like she has defined breasts, this and that. It's like, wow, that's just, I'm so tiny compared to them. I mean, I look at myself, I'm just a tiny guy. So I continued working, and the craziest thing, what happened is, at the end of this Boy Scouts camp, at the end of the period, Scott told Anita to take me to Social Security Administration. And a bunch of other people, because we worked so great. And I even learned how to tie some knots. He took me to Social Security and they made a Social Security card for me. They said, I don't know how it's even possible. I have no idea. I mean, in America, Social Security is, it said for work only, but it was the first time I come to Social Security Administration. There was like one other guy there, a friend of a friend. And they're just like, okay. So whenever I apply for a job, you know, whenever I used to apply for jobs, my social security starts with 482, which is Iowa. They're like, you are Ukrainian black guy, Iowa. Like nothing makes sense. And they made social security for me and some other guys. They're like, well, you did so well. If you want to work in America for extra month, you can use the social security. And I was like, whoa. And so there was an option. There was an option to, so towards the end of the camp, we had an option to extend third month. And I'm going to get right now to the refugee. Extend a month or work there for a month for extra $1,000. Or find a job and go to a place. And this is when I was like, wait, I have 1 month left, technically. I need to apply for a refugee. How do I do this? I'm middle of nowhere. How does it work in America? What is it? So I said, well, I probably gonna find a place to work outside of the camp. And this is when I started looking for, I didn't know how to use a computer. Tara, I had no idea how to use a computer. And so this guy that caught me when I was lost in the woods, we became close friends, and I was giving him extra food. I don't know how much extra, it's crazy. Like, we were feeding them so much, and the kids were still hungry. So I was giving him access to corn. Like, I was giving him so much corn, and he taught me how to create my email. We had one computer on site, and I said, I need to apply for a refugee. I mean, me, 18-year-old guy, tells that to that some 13 or 14-year-old, that I want to become refugee. Like, it doesn't even sink. So he helped me with email, and we used Yahoo search at the time. Everything was Yahoo, I remember. I did send my emails to a bunch of random organizations saying that I am a refugee, and I also attached, before I left Ukraine, my mom did this smart thing. She collected the evidence that I was in hospital, that I had brain concussion, knife stabs, everything. We had some records, not everything, but we had some. So I sent it, and I got a response from Portland, Oregon. I got a response from two places. The second was actually Portland, but in Maine, and then there was Portland, Oregon. But I felt with my gut feeling that I have to go to Portland, Oregon. I told her about what's going on with me. She says, you know, I'm going to find you, there'll be a host family. And, she provided a host family, and, she said, we're going to figure it out. You can tell that you're going to work for me. You're going to be just doing some part-time work, cleaning the store or whatever. So I told them in Iowa that I'm going to do. And so I took a Greyhound bus, and 4 days I took this ride, and God knows where. I went all the way to Portland, Oregon. The whole Greyhound bus thing is a separate conversation. There's a lot of tweakers, drug addicts there, and somebody wanted me to marry his kid if I want to stay. It was just there's a lot. There was a lot. It felt like a movie. It felt like some unscripted drama movie that has these plot twists every given moment. But when I don't know how many minutes and hours we're talking now. I have really, I lost sense of, I don't know if there is a limit, Tara. No. I'm just saying that when I made it to Portland, I was met with the host family immediately. And they had two kids, and the vibe was, I already felt the vibe was heavy in a way that the kids were doing some drugs, not just cannabis, but like something else. And one kid was 14 or 13, and another was 8. And the way it's structured for many host families, they use you as a dependent and tax write-off. I didn't know about that at the time, but things were not just feeling right, because I was sleeping. First, I had a mattress on the floor, and then I slept on the couch. I thought there would be a refugee camp, but it doesn't. It's not the way it works. And so when I came to the case manager, the case manager said, when I applied, she basically, she said, she cannot do anything with me until I apply and hire a lawyer and apply for asylum, because that's, they only start working with refugees once refugee is a refugee and he's accepted. So this $1,100 that I earned, it all went to the lawyer. I applied, I had a place to stay, and I had basically 2 weeks before my visa expiration. And I was so nervous because I felt like I don't want to be undocumented or illegal. You know, in fact, throughout my whole life, I have never been undocumented, illegal. In Germany, deportation happened. They just deported us, even though we were still legal. There was just deportation. There was never, we never went over. And I had that fear, but confidence that I will be legal and something's going to happen, even in those 2 weeks. So, and the lawyer wanted more paperwork. He said, well, the fact that you experienced racism in Ukraine, you had these knife stabs, this and that, it doesn't really show the situation in Ukraine. So my mom had to go and find these independent newspapers because everything is silenced. Ukraine was also going through revolution at the time. I left during Orange Revolution. I skipped that subject. There was like these nationalists from the West that were chasing me in Kiev. There was just a lot of stuff in between. So I escaped exactly when the revolution happened, the Orange Revolution. And so Ukraine was trying to prove European Union that they don't have racism, even though the soccer teams, for many years, the Ukrainian national teams had to say no to racism on their jerseys when they're playing. This is how Europe saw Ukraine. But it was silenced a lot of newspaper. And so my mom did such good job. She found people, she found newspaper, she scanned it, she mailed it, she DHL'd it. We had a case. We had a case and we submitted everything, what I sent to you, minus the newspapers, I guess, to lawyer, and lawyer submitted to immigration. So in 3 days, 2 or 3 days, I still have a timestamp over there. 2 days before my visa expired, I received a letter from Immigration Service saying that status changes to pending and we are evaluating your status. You are not legal nor illegal. You are pending. So I'm in the pending state. And there's this sense of constant fatigue. Constant fatigue that emotionally you are emotionally drenched. It's like someone squeezed the juice and you're operating on the last cells that is within you. So I this host family tells me, all right, you gotta find a job. Even though I was told by a case manager and this all immigration, you cannot work illegally because you can get caught. The host family needs money. And they're like, you also need money because lawyer will ask you more money for any procedure. So everybody needs money. So they find me a job. I'm thankful to them. They find me a job at the Eastern European deli store where I was mopping floors and just making cassettes, like video, basically copyright, infringing copyrighted movies. So all the movies that came out, they translated into Russian and were selling them there. So I was doing that, and I was mopping the floors. And you know, the thing is, when I was mopping the floors, I felt ashamed that this is, I came that far. And you know, because the people that will enter the store, they will look at me, they're like, oh, you know, the Ukrainians and Russians, they will say like, oh, these niggers, they cannot find a job, so now they work for us, for Russians. You get these comments like, oh, now it's so bad that they're working for us. And so I felt like, wow, I made it all the way to America and I hear these comments. You know, and they didn't even know that I speak Russian. They don't know me. They just see me just working there. And because mostly, you know, Eastern European, they hire their own people and this and that. And I was happy. They gave me $6 an hour. And this is when my I had a CD player, and I just put the music on. I listened to a lot of some Ukrainian gangster rap that was kind of motivational, different things, just different, anything I could get my mind off and not to hear the surroundings. And just, I made the money. The store was far away from where the host family was. So every day on the bus was like hour and a half, back and forth, back and forth. And I was trying to do low key. Sometimes the case manager will call and check on me, what am I doing? And she will call, I'm not home. I'll say, oh, I was outside. So I had to lie. I had to pretend that I'm home or I'm outside and I didn't get the call. She didn't call me that often. And then the day comes for me to, 2 months later, I'm getting another letter. And I was, these letters make me so nervous because I thought, for a second, I thought I probably got caught working, whatnot. But the letter says that I have to go show up at the interview. So the interview was sometime September, October. Yeah. And I'm going, and I had a option to get a lawyer for the interview, but it will cost me $1,000 for the interview duration. And I said, I'm going to go without a lawyer. I'll try to do it myself. And so at the interview, it was probably the most, now I've understood how my, what my mom had to go through in Germany. I went through the most turmoil, intensive interview about every single wound I suffered, every single damage I suffered, the interview went through my whole life, what it was, what I experienced. And it was 3.5 hours long, almost 4 hours. I had to pull my shorts down because I have knife stabs that are still, there are big wounds behind. You've seen them on the case. It was so humiliating, and I was so exhausted, and I could have used the translator, but I spoke English all the time. Even if there was misunderstanding, I will still respond and stick to what it is. And there was this one question when I was hit with metal rods, and it was a repetitive question just to see if I remember and see if I'm consistent with my statement. And he said, when you were on the ground, how many times did they hit you with the metal rod? And I just said, if this will happen to you, would you remember? Would you remember this will happen to you? And I just said, and the security guard came because I just exploded because it doesn't make any sense to ask the same thing when I'm on the floor. How many times did they? I felt so devastated. I said, is this America? Is this America? Is this the system? I had so many tears. The security guard came, took me out. And I saw other people waiting. There was somebody from Salvador or some Central American countries. And I asked them, like, what happens after this? They said, well, they can take 1 year, 2 years to evaluate. And I said, what do you do this time? So just work, like you work illegally. You're working, right? Trabajo. Like, yeah, working. So I said, wow. So now after this, I can wait. There is no time frame. There is nothing with decision making. And I'm just stuck in this pending state. About 8 days later, I'm getting a letter from a lawyer, and he said, surprise, and it was attached was approval of the refugee case. I got approved. The lawyer called me. He charged me money for this call. But he said it was the fastest case he ever experienced. I felt like, wow, I'm safe. So approval of refugee case means if you get speeding ticket or any 3 violations, they can still kick you out, but you can stay and you can at least find, you can get your social security in place. They change the status and you can find a real job. I thought that it must happen. There has to be an end. So I was so happy, and I immediately, a few weeks later, I got this card, the status approval on Ukrainian passport that says refugee acquitted, approved. And I got $200 of food stamps, I remember, food stamp money, and I got $300 cash aid for the first few months. And there was this organization, and the case manager also got involved. She says, okay, now I'm gonna get involved, so we'll find you a job. What can you do? I started working. First ever job. There was some event, and I had to direct the traffic left and right for the event. And then I told the refugee center, like, I don't want to do this. Give me a better job. They're like, well, most our she says it's not so easy because you're nothing, you're nobody, and refugees are mostly in cleaning business. What happened in Portland in 2005, one of the refugees that lived in a household, they left the gas on in their house, the gas stove, and so there was something that happened there. And the news went around, basically nobody wanted to hire anyone who is a refugee. So there was a word around local newspaper. And she says, well, it's gonna be hard to find a job besides cleaning, which is like minimum $7.25 or $7.50 at the time. And said, well, just put me, apply anywhere. I want to do something more mechanical, something where I can learn, evolve. And she found this job where she says, okay, we can try apply. We applied for, our first real job was a chainsaw factory, Carlton Chainsaw Factory. I came there 4 hours before the interview, and I put, I basically snuck in, I put the gown and looked like one of the employees, and I just tried to shadow people and what they're doing. And I mean, the chainsaw is like, there is a reel, there is a chain, there are pivots, there are ribbons, there's like a lot of these different parts. And there is a depositing machine that deposits the chain to be in place. So all of this, I tried to remember within hour and a half, 2 hours. I just, I shadowed this guy, and he was so confused, like, why am I there? I said, well, I just want to learn how it works. I feel like I'm going to work here. I will work here. I didn't even know that I'm going to work here, but I felt like, yeah, I'm going to work here. So the interview comes, and she looks at me. She's like, what do you know about chainsaw? I said, well, I don't know much, but. She asked me questions, and everything that I remembered, I just told her everything that I just spitting out. Like, she's like, what is this? This is real. What is this? This is that. She's like, how do you know chainsaw so well? I said, well, I want to work. I want to be here. I feel I can do well. She got me a job right on the spot. She got me a job. She said, you can start next week. I was the first out of all refugees to get job outside of the cleaning. it was surprised. So I kept the other job, working for cash. And I'm just fast forwarding things right now. It was such a win, and I and the host family. So the host family started asking me money, and I had to pay money to the lawyer, the remainder of money. And so the host family did this thing to me where they said, we're gonna move to another apartment because there's not much space, and we're gonna split it in half. Like four of them will pay half, and I pay another half. I said, well, no, I mean, that's not fair. And then they said, well, we helped you so much. We got you a job. We got you on your feet. And they made a hint that they may tell the refugee organization that I worked illegally. And I thought, wow, okay, now this. What I did is I went to the case manager, and I told her that I did work illegally beforehand. She was screaming at me. She said, Ali, you jeopardized everything. I said, well, I didn't have a choice. So all these times you called, I worked illegally. I was never caught. And she said, okay, she'll handle it. So whatever she did, I got kicked out of the place. I stayed in a shelter for a few days. Granted, I didn't have much stuff. And then the same case manager found me an apartment in outside of Oregon, outside of Portland, which is Oregon City. So I lived in Oregon City, a little town, $300 a month. So, and I thought, wow, with money, I can pull this off. I can pull this off, because I was making maybe 1,000 at the time, maybe more. And the life just started. The life just started from there. There were a lot of things. Is this okay if I use the bathroom?
Yes, absolutely.
Is it okay?
Yeah. We can stop. We can do anything.
Yeah. I'll use the bathroom real quick. I'll be right back.
Of course. Yeah. Oh. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. I'm there, you know. I'm not even here. I'm there. Yeah. So in 2000, and before going to Oregon City, and in between the transition, I was living in this neighborhood. You know, it's close to, it's like 82nd Drive and close to MLK. There is like the place where I had to go to work and live. There was a lot of like Black and Hispanic neighborhoods. And when I was living there, I will ride a bus, and I'll talk to people on the bus. I talk to Black people, sometimes they'll see me again and we'll talk. And I told them about my story. I told them about what is it that I went through. And there was so much hate instilled into me, in a way that they're like, oh my God, this fucking white people, racist, this, that, they're fucking this, they fucked us here. And there is so much of hatred. And I will go to work, and I was expecting racism. I'll be like, even from the people that paid me money and were nice to me, I was expecting something to happen. I thought in deep in their hearts, they probably hate me. They probably will reject me and throw me away because I'm not worthy. And that mindset, when I was, again, that was the period of time when I lived in Portland, Oregon with host family and talked to, because I needed a way to socialize. I realized how much I lost social, how much social I lost, you know, like, I feel like now today I'm catching up to this, but I lost so much of social interaction and I needed to talk to anybody. And the information that I will get, because I would subconsciously reach more for Black people, because I feel like that's the safer haven and I will talk to them, but all I will get is the negativity. All I will get is the hate, because the story I tell them, they amplify it and they're like, oh, what happened? You don't know what happened to us in the 50s, 40s, this and that. And so I don't know their story. That's the thing. I cannot apply my story on story of what folks experienced. So it's coming from a very different angle. But when they put the layer on you that America is already racist, I started expecting like my level of distrust was already zero because I'm a refugee. I just got qualified, approved. I mean, even before being qualified, before being approved, this conversation will take place. And I started to second guess myself, like, am I in the right place? Because that's how the Black people were treated here. And only, Tara, only after escaping that neighborhood, only after going through this turmoil, separation from the host family, I got into my own space for the first time. The landlord there was the guy from Republic. He was Russian, but he was born in Republic of Georgia. He was Christian as well. And I told him my story and he said, well, Jesus saved you. It must be Jesus. Your mom is Christian, right? So Jesus. So there was another side of that. But I felt that I am in a safe place. Like I have my own room. Nobody can influence me anything. I didn't even have mobile phone. I didn't have a computer, but all I knew is that there is a bus route. I get to work like this. And the landlord actually had a computer and I asked him if I could use it sometimes. And I realized there is a moment of peace for the first time. So moment of peace for the first time where I can just sit down and just evaluate people without judging it from my skin color, just to see what it is their relation towards me day-to-day basis. What is it? And because I felt like everything is in a mindset. And I understood that in so many years, being in this victimhood, being in the mindset, the victim mindset comes from abuse, assault, and just running, escaping skinheads, many different situations. You're in the survival mode. But I could have given up so many times and just say this America thing not gonna work, or Germany. There is a way to really tap into your inner psyche and just see yourself and take yourself out of the victim mindset. So how it happened with me is it all started when I moved to this Oregon city. The people around me, they all had the same sort of issue that I kept hearing, is that they have computers, something breaks down, and it doesn't work, and they bring it to fix somebody, they fix it, it doesn't work again. So I decided to learn how to use computers from scratch. Learn how to, it took me a month and a half to even put a computer together. And I was still going to two jobs. I was still doing two jobs. I would ride a bicycle at night. The job was from six, the chainsaw job was from 6 to 3. And the first job was from, I don't remember, 12 to 2, 12 to 3. So it was like, I kind of made it work. And there was even a time when I was riding a bike. I would ride the bike for 45 minutes from the chainsaw to my home. And at night, one time I was passing a cop, and I was so nervous. I passed the cop on the downhill, and he stopped me afterwards. And he asked me, "Do you know why I stopped you for?" I said, "Probably speeding." He looks at me, he says, "No, you don't have a helmet, you don't have a light, you are a hazard. And my heart was pumping. I was like, "Oh my God, is this?" Because I know I cannot have any violations. I'm still a refugee. Like, so he asked me for ID. I gave him my ID. He looks at me, he says, are you new here?" I said, "Yes." He just asked me like, "What do you do?" I said, "Well, I work at Carlton." I was like proud. I work for a company. I actually have taxes. There's some deduction. I didn't even know what that is. I mean, I'm just 18 years old. So what he did, he escorted me home, which was amazing. For 45 minutes, he escorted me home with his lights. And it was such a beautiful scene. And I bought lights afterwards. And I said, "Okay, I need to learn these computers thing." And I built my computer. YouTube started to get popular, so I learned a little bit about it. And then one of the first iPhones came out, which was a year later, 2007. And I learned how to jailbreak it. And I became the sort of guy for the community, for the Ukrainian, Eastern European community, when it comes to computers. And through computer, I actually learned, I don't know how really, like there was this movie that came out, The Secret. I had no idea how it came. No idea. I started looking for some ways, psychology. So there's two things that I started studying. First thing, because I was living in Eastern European community and they were all church people, they go to church. So they brought me to church. I told a story at the church. So I became a member of the church. I know that's something my mom liked. And I thought, well, that's the savior. I mean, I'm 18 years old. A lot of miracles happened to me. So definitely must be Jesus. That's what I thought at the time. And I was a member. And then they were doing these, you know, when they pray on you, they speak in tongues. And I thought to myself, something is just not right. Because when the pastor preaches in tongues and you stay there and I see some people fall down, that made me question about the whole concept of, and then I saw how the church system works in a way of donations, you know, the priest has, all the money, and it's like this pyramid. I mean, again, I just had my own vision. I don't want to offend anyone's religious feelings, but it was just the way I saw it. Something just didn't click. And so I wanted to learn about psychology, why people fall down from praying, and what is the power of mind. And all of a sudden, I came upon Secret. It just all led me, all these questions from church, this, led me to this one movie by Byrne. I don't remember the first name. And I was just, it made me look, and it just opened my eyes. I was like, wow, everything is energy. Everything is a law of attraction. You attract what you want. And finally, I'm in a space where I can, at least I have time to attract something good in my life. I mean, I did attract the job because I went there, I wanted that job. So I was following it, but I was not conscious about it. I didn't even know that was a thing. I was always told that you have to pray for things, you have to, you know, pray God or pray this, this and that to get it. But you don't know the mechanics. This opened my eyes in terms of what it is, how you can bring things into your life and future and how you can heal. So I used that technique. There was another one, what the bleep do we know? I think that came a little bit later. I used that and I go to church and I said, can I pray on somebody? And I didn't even pray. I just put my hand and I was just channeling energy on a person. And the person also kind of fell down like, and I said, it's all just energy. It's not like in the name of Jesus, you know, you don't have to do it in the name of Muhammad or this or Buddha. It's just the energy. The person surrenders to you. Of course, you can send the energy and the person will sit. You know, the other day we were bending forks. You know, I never thought I would bend fork. Boom, I bend the fork, you know, just like that. So all of a sudden, there was this awakening that the victimhood and everything else that I can reevaluate. I have to get out of this state. I'm in a peaceful place. And I talked to my case manager as well, who really, when we recently talked, she said, you were so afraid of everything, so distrustful and this and that. And she said, you changed into completely new person. And this is the person that knew me from day one, pretty much in the United States. And I'm very thankful for her to do what she did. And when I became US citizen, which was in 2012, I was so thankful. It was just one of the most brilliant moments of my life. So there were a lot of things that happened afterwards. It's just, this awakening was so big. It's so hard to emphasize, to convey the amount of awareness that it takes when you're in a calm place. There was a lot of pain and I felt, okay, I've been suffering so much pain. And through this movie and some other things, I sort of became detached from pain. So I found a way to detach myself completely from everything that happened in the past. So if somebody would ask me, oh, how did you come to, well, I told the people from church how it all happened, but I later learned to completely detach from that side. So I won't even talk about the bad things. I said, it just happened, the people were bad, and I will talk as if it was not even me. And I felt like that's the way to escape. It's not probably the ideal way, but it helped me so much. It helped me so much. I started to, I didn't know how to meditate, but I would still go to church, but I'll go to church when they were to the point where they sing songs for Jesus, praising Jesus, and then I'll just leave. Because the rest, I didn't need the rest. I just needed praising and gratitude, because there's a message of gratitude, thank you, and this and that. And that's how I later started understanding the importance of gratitude, importance of affirmations. I didn't know, nobody taught me any of this. It just started coming, because the thing is, Kara, when you're constantly in the survival mode, you don't even know, when no one teaches you anything, you don't have teacher, you don't have a baseline, you don't have foundation. The only foundations you have is, my father is a Muslim, so he prays Allah, but now he God knows where in Africa. My mother is Christian, and she prayed Jesus. That's the only foundation I have. And then some tribal ancestral knowledge that I don't remember, because I only lived with my father for 8 years. So it was just sort of regaining and putting myself back to pieces. You know, it's like there was moments when the pieces were just shattered, and I'm just like, little by little, I go work, I'm staying busy. And even people at work, they were fascinated how I picked up on chainsaw, how I was able to just make it work, something that the chains that were broken, I even fixed them, and I have a mind to do it. And I realized that this is what brought me to computers, is that because I like to save people and help people in moments of crisis. And it just brought me there. And I was just very, very thankful for it.
Thank you for joining me in experiencing Ali's story thus far. Please make sure that you find him on social media now and send him all kinds of love. His links are in the show notes. And keep an eye out. The next chapter of Ali's story will be released in just 2 days. If you are enjoying this series, please share, rate, review, and subscribe. I am sending you so much love, and I'll see you soon.